There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's a lot to unpack. I mean,
especially at 7 a.m.
Especially at 7 a.m. here in sunny Florida. It's kind of odd because when you're faced with challenges, a lot of the times, we, especially now, we become very soft. And what happens is we cave in and we're like, okay, I'm not, let me do the same thing. I don't want to change. You know, it's too hard. It's too difficult. The problem with that is that you end up being in the same place over and over again. It's like being stuck in the forest and you have no idea where you're going. You just keep on going around in circles.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So being open to change and open to not getting a fixed lane or a fixed mold.
I think it is the only solution if you genuinely want to be a real human being and be a creative artist, because the reality is there's so many people that are making films and making music and creating content through the wazoo. It's like, what do you have to offer that's different? Why should somebody spend their time with your content? I mean, reality is because it's genuine. It's real. There's something to it.
And that's what people crave, right?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Awesome, man. But I love it. I love, because I had the privilege of coming on your show and now you're on here. I don't know too much of your, call it like your Dave Lennon origin story and some of the challenges that you've, significant challenges that you've overcome. And we also have this thing where, you know, podcasting is a challenge in itself.
Right.
But take us back a bit, man. Like, what was your kind of inkling when you were younger? Like what was kind of natural to you?
Well, I grew up in an interracial home. My mom is white, and my dad was from North Africa. My dad was from Morocco. My upbringing, I can describe it in two words, was chaotic and an experience. Would I do that experience again? Probably not. But my father was a very creative person. He was very artistic. He had a love for food, and which hence where I get my love for the kitchens. My sister and my mom were very creative as artists. My mom has always been very artistic. And It was very strange because I grew up in a very close community. I grew up in a religious Orthodox community in upstate New York. I was constantly surrounded by people that were telling me to be something that I wasn't. And I wasn't allowed to express myself the way that I wanted to or be heard, because when you're a part of that environment, you're not allowed to have your own opinions. You're not allowed to think freely. It's just not what's done.
Yeah. Wow. So how did you push back? Or when did you start pushing back against that?
It wasn't until I left the community about 2017. My genius idea was, let me pick up my bags and move to Israel, which I did. In 2017, at the end of the year, I moved out there. It was an experience. I spent about 3 years out there. Why? I just wanted to try something different. You know, I met a lot of artists out there. I met a lot of hippies. Did a lot of drugs. A lot. You'd be surprised. You think Israelis are tame. Oh, no. They do way more drugs than Americans do, even though they have half the supply available. It's crazy. But I think one of the coolest things that I experienced more than anything was just the... out there, a lot of people, when you go to venues, this is similar in Germany. You know what I'm talking about. It's not common here in the U.S. at all. You go to you go out on a Thursday night, right? And there's a bunch of breweries, there's a bunch of cafes, there's a bunch of restaurants. You just walk around, and then some places will have live music or have some venues, and you just hop around and you're checking out what's going on. I used to do that like every Thursday night. I used to just go run through town every Thursday night,
and just take it wherever it like led you.
Yeah.
I think we got that in common, man. Like, you know, when I was telling you my story and I had to take like a dramatic left turn to kind of, to like the physical relocation of countries really like helped me try and step into a new realm as a person. So it sounds like you did a similar thing where you just went, you know what? I'm taking like a massive left turn here.
You sometimes need to. I mean, my situation is a lot different than yours, but it's very similar. I mean, when you come from Australia, which is a whole different environment. I mean, we talked about this on my podcast. It's like going from Australia to England to Germany. You know, people are like, oh, Australians and English people are the same. No, they're not. Have you met Australians? Have you met people from England? Very different. But they're both English. No, they're not. It's like night, literally, like night and day of difference.
But it takes courage, man. And it takes courage to do what you did, to step into this. To break out of that, call it restrictive community, to break out of that with a sense that, like, your own self-expression might be limited, and in turn, like, it takes courage.
Religion is not for anyone, and I feel especially for artistic minds, sometimes it could be a definite struggle. I never worked well in a box, as much as I tried or tried to believe it. I can't think with one mindset. It's just not how I'm programmed.
So then what did you take from that when you then returned to the States?
When I came to the States, I went to a friend. We were friends for several years, and we had a massive feud. She was also from the community. She had her kids were taken away from her. She lived out in New Jersey. And from there, I went back to my parents' place. And me and my dad, we never really saw eye to eye. We always were fighting. Like, the joke in my family was, if you put me and my dad in a room for more than 4 hours and we were okay, that was good. We always like it.
4 hours is a
it's a fair amount. So I just I called up my brother. My brother, he lives in Cali, and he's not religious, and he asked me to move out there. And when I moved out to California, moving out to California, I was only here for like not even a year, but that experience kind of changed my life because I met Carissa, who's the host of American Groove, which is one of the segments that I do, and she's one of my best friends. And it's interesting, like, as I've been moving around, because, you know, I went from L.A. and I went back to New York, and then I went from New York, I moved down here to Florida. Each place I've been to, I've learned different types of struggles, like financial responsibilities, living-wise, and then the people that are around there that are creative.
Mm. Yeah. So you found a different community, in a way, when you got back.
I have, you know, it's interesting when we call it, it's called OTD. It stands for off the derech. It means off your path. Usually, from what I've seen, a lot of people, they go either two directions. They either go where they go to groups of OTD people, and a lot of the times these people are just miserable, sad, just so depressed, and they just have no reason for living. Like, it's just a pit of pity. And then a lot of people like me, like loners, we just figure things out on our own. I wasn't raised in the real world. I don't know what the real world was. Like, I didn't know what the real world... I'm not kidding. I did not know what the real world was until about 2017. And it was like, oh, shit, this is a lot worse than I thought it was.
Yeah, have you read... Do you know the book I and John? I thought of it
before. I don't believe I've heard it, no.
It's, From memory, it sort of focuses a lot on the father-son relationship, and there's this crossover moment where the son kind of takes on the father, and I think it's like it's sort of the point where the son stops becoming the son and kind of stands up to the old man for the first time, and obviously there's no like strict rule or guarantee that that happens, but I don't know. I think it's common for dudes that there is this moment that's really like kind of visceral in a way, the first time they kind of stand up to their father. I just thought of that when you're saying, you know, you had quite a heated relationship there.
It's strange because one of the hardest things for my dad was. He did everything very quiet. He wouldn't tell you that he was taking care of things or moving things around or making phone calls or helping out. He never told you. You'd find out from somebody else. And he would never express emotions or feelings. Rarely. You know, it's very strange, but it's hard to explain when you're an American. And this country is full of immigrants. When you have parents, especially ones that are immigrants from Mexico, North Africa, the Caribbeans, people understand this. You're dealing with somebody that has no understanding of what it is to be in the United States. Their understanding is, I'm here to build my family, to create something here in this country, to have an opportunity. That's their mindset. So... it's really hard. It's really hard, but like I didn't really figure this out until like he passed away. I was like, oh, and then as time went on, I started putting the pieces together, and I was like, he kind of made more sense. And it's strange that it took death for that to happen. I know that's not like a solution that a lot of people want to hear, but sometimes that is.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that he passed.
Thanks, man.
I was asking that question, but there's no greater teacher than loss, right?
Yeah,
it can spin. You know, I've experienced it, and it. I mean, everyone will at some stage, right? And it's to say it's a game changer is an understatement.
puts everything to a halt. You know, you want to talk about challenges. I think the biggest challenge you have to ask yourself, imagine you can never talk to this person ever again.
Yeah, you do. I know it. Yeah. Yeah, it brings many things into play. You know, how precious time is, and, you know, valuing the expressing love to the person when they're still on the planet and stuff. Yeah, it's a... Yeah.
Sorry, this went real dark, real deep, real quick.
I tend to cut through it. That's what I love about it, man. Not afraid to go there. And so then, so were you in university and stuff after that, or did you just get very focused on, like, I'm gonna juggle a couple of jobs, as you say, and then pursue my art at the same time?
I feel like it kind of came in waves. I first, you know, started dabbling into art and kind of progressed from there. The type of art I do is like a psychedelic abstract art.
I want to see it.
I was working on something the other day. So, like, something like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cool. It's like, yeah, awesome.
So,
it's like, I don't want to use the word, but like juxtaposed, very different forms, like, but kind of harmony integrated.
I love, I know it sounds weird, but I love, structures, like objects, like squares, lines, squiggles, and I love putting those patterns together. And over time, I started having a love for other types of art. That progressed to music. You know, as a kid, this is another weird fact about Dave. I had an uncle that was a musician in the 70s, and he was an alcoholic. He went through abuse through the wazoo. So my family's love of learning instruments, especially like my mom, because that was her brother, was no. So I was not allowed to learn any musical instruments when I was a kid. Absolutely not. And it wasn't until I was an adult, and I was like, wait a minute. I'm an adult now. So if I want to learn guitar, I can. My mom wasn't happy about it. She flipped out. Yeah.
That's crazy, man. See, I just can't imagine. I mean, I've had my own journey with music, but I cannot imagine. I mean, the only small hint, and it doesn't relate in any way, but was like at high school, I kept refusing to book the drum room because I just didn't want to go on a waiting list, and I would just go in and try and play. Yeah. And I just didn't associate drumming to like booking a scheduled thing. And so I would go in there and try and play the kit, and I'd get kicked out by the trumpet player or whatever. And the only way I can relate is I felt this calling to play this instrument, but I did feel restricted at the same time because I didn't have a kit. I had nowhere to play. And at school, I was literally like, just couldn't make it happen. But also I was refusing to follow the rules.
So it kind of sucks though, because like you're trying to learn this instrument and they're like, oh no, you have to wait. Why? Oh, because you know, Stacy on the clarinet, which sounds terrible, is playing right now.
Well, awesome! You picked it up. We're talking like electric guitar.
No, acoustic guitar. It's that one right there.
Yeah, cool.
And I started playing guitar, and I started realizing how difficult it was and how much it destroys your fingers. But I definitely found a love to it. I mean, I'm a very my parents' favorite band was Simon and Garfunkel, and a lot of their songs are done on acoustic guitar. It was really cool when I was when I had my guitar teacher. We would sometimes go over like the different songs and how they would put together the chords. It's sometimes really cool when you look at other artists and how they created their work, and you see, oh wow, that's how they made their their song. That's how they made their progression. That was something an interesting and like a really cool learning experience. Because as an artist, the more you develop your craft, the more that you add more things, you know, like drawing and singing and playing an instrument, you start to learn different things that you didn't know before, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, they feed each other.
Yeah.
All the different creative mediums. And yeah, you're right. Like when you pull apart someone else's stuff, it gives you a real insight into how they do it. I don't know about you, but like I'm getting real frustrated at the moment seeing all this stuff that's like, you know, learn friggin' piano without learning piano. Because it feels like, as you meant, like the element of craft is being undermined a little bit at the moment. And the joy, there's just so much joy and frustration in the learning process. But if you don't have that and you're just trying to have like an instant, like skip the 10,000 hours and have like an instant thing, I just don't see the value in it.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because, you know, we live in a day and age, especially where you can use presets and loops, and people are able to make music at their fingertips. The thing that you don't realize is that it's not... None of these things are easy. You know, when I came into even like, for example, podcasting, none of this is easy. You know, as much as TikTok and short videos, like, yeah, it's easy to be an artist. You know, it's easy to be creative. No, it's not. It's really not. Like, sorry to bust your balls, but no.
It's absolutely not. Not only are you dealing with all your own self-doubts and everything just to get in the room of whatever you're making, then there's the actual, like, making of the stuff. There's so many aspects. And people often just see the end thing and they're like, oh, wow, that was, you know.
Easy.
But that's why I encourage anyone to, like, try and make a film. Like, just give it a crack and see what happens, you know.
I'm going to leave it to professionals.
Yeah, I mean, you're a really unique guy with a level head on your shoulders for being relatively young. I feel like the kind of older one, but I just think because you chose to take that leap and go to Europe, and you fiercely like pushed back against these limits and constraints that were around you. I just can't emphasize how beneficial that is.
It is. It's also it's about a mentality. It's all about the way of thinking. You know, the reason why I brought up my dad is because it's very important. Because when you're raised in an interracial home and you get the mixture of different cultures, and you have a very different way of thinking. You know, my way of thinking is, my dad had a belief is, you want to be successful, don't work hard, be creative, and use your time wisely. Don't spend your time doing the things you don't want to. And, you know, a lot of the times we get into these ruts where you work a 9-to-5 and that's all you do. You go home, you watch TV, you enjoy your weekend, you just watch TV. That's all you do. That's great. But are you actually being successful doing that?
Dude, it's taken me 20 years to get off the dance floor in terms of repeating the same. I was always pursuing my creative life, but in terms of like recoiling back in moments of fear and like trying to not only survive, but thrive as an artist. But every time I stepped back into that realm, call it a corporate world or whatever, it's exactly as you say, like it always played out the same way. And it was like, you know, I was sitting in meetings a few years ago, literally like 3-hour meetings about like friggin' paper clips. And I was like, you could change that and be sitting in a conversation like this instead. How do you want to use your time on, yeah, on this planet?
And I think also, you know, you brought up a really good point, especially like with age. I'm 24, but I'm not trying to be arrogant by any regards. You're not going to find a lot of people my age with my type of thinking. A lot of people my age, especially now, they're very naive and very sold to the system. They're like, oh, okay, I'm a liberal. Why? Yeah, because they don't care. They don't have any... It's strange, and I think a lot of the reason why I have my mentality that I have is because I've seen a wide variety of different types of environments, like you mentioned, like Europe, and been over in different places, and life sucks, and it's shitty. So the thing is, I'm not going to allow that to be my blocker. I'm going to figure out ways of getting over that, because in the end of the day is, I may be 24, but I will be 30 in a couple of years, and then I'll be 35 in another couple of years from there. And it just goes from there. It's like, eh, worry about it later. Don't do that. Don't worry about it later. When you worry about it later, that's where you fuck up.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Like, I'm not just blowing smoke. From our first conversation, you're very perceptive. And for a young buck, it's really refreshing. And I think there should be more conversations between, like, call myself or not. Like, we've got just about 20 years between us, but the fact that we can find, you know, the same level playing field is awesome. Given how much discourse and stuff there is, and as you say, people kind of just reverting into it. It's pretty cool.
The pattern, almost repetitive pattern.
Yeah, and if you keep at that, like, there's just no doubt. Like, I don't have regret at all, because everything has taught me something. But it's taken me, like, sometimes I do get frustrated. It took me so long to, like, align my particularly my creative soul. So you're an example of a young guy who's, like, who's already going at that. So
you're right, though. It you know, you said like 20 years. It takes a long time. I feel like my journey started 6 years ago, but, you know, expect. I think one of the things that I've had to get out of my mind the most, more than anything, is numbers. Now, I think that's kind of the reason why we're in the situation we are right now. Is worrying about all the amount of followers and likes and subscribes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice. It's real nice, but how much is that really going to benefit you in the long run? Honestly.
I seriously think that, like, you know, when you see those articles of, like, older folks, like perhaps in their 70s or 80s, talking about their regrets, I think when those articles come out from this generation, the regrets will be too much time, wasted time on social media and stuff. I'm not talking about not using it, but just like endless scrolling and seeing value in, you know, value in these numbers, as you say. It's a very strange
world.
Disconnect. I'm so much cooler when there's a small but genuine audience with whatever the project, like, resonating or grooving with it, as opposed to just kind of a meaningless me. I'd rather have a much smaller but genuine community.
It's so hard to connect with, let alone 100 people, let alone 1,000, you know, let alone even 1 million people. You know, it's... I don't know. It's like, if you do it for the numbers, it doesn't feel beneficial at all. I do it because I want to do it, and I do it because... How many opportunities do we get to speak the truth and be honest with ourselves and, you know, not get shut down or like, oh no, that's not true.
Yeah, it's rare. And to grow. I mean, dude, but the first little short doco that I made, like it, I just, the cool thing about that was it took the focus off myself during a very difficult time. But my point is, I still get emails and sometimes letters from people associated with the guy I made the tribute to in the film, my drum teacher. I get these letters now and then. And that's just everything to me. It's like, that's why I made it, you know?
That's beautiful. Can you imagine like working on a documentary and then you have like people that were a part of it that just, they want to see how you're doing and kind of keep you in.
I don't mean it in a cheesy way. It's just seriously, like when people take the time to write to you personally and say, hey man, that made me dust off the drum kit or, it's like, what else can you ask for, really?
I know.
That's the, yeah.
I'm still waking up.
It's kind of a nice state to be in, man. I should have had a longer nap before we, it's kind of that hazy state.
I had a long nap before this. I'm sorry, you were going to ask me something.
When you're in, call it these, you know, when you obviously got, you know, you got to make a living while you build, and there's practicalities. Like you said earlier, you had to learn how to like just juggle the pure practicalities of like finance and so on. But when you're juggling jobs and stuff, how do you retain your sanity in those worlds? Is it because you know you have another focus?
It's kind of strange. The way that I keep myself sane is keeping busy. It's kind of strange. I'm kind of like my dad. My dad was always working, always loved like working on something. And I kind of understand that mentality. It's not about like, are you going to burn yourself out? The thing is, you burn yourself out when you do things you don't want to do. Mm. You know, I spend, just to give you a little bit of an idea of what my week looks like, I can spend upwards of 14 to 16 hours podcasting. I spend about 38 hours working. And then right now with part-time work, it's additional, I think, like 20 hours. So.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Are you good at giving yourself any windows of time with downtime within that?
It depends on the day. I usually just need a few hours or just one day to just recoup or rejuvenate.
You're right, though. It's like there's a difference between good use of energy and like it, when you're just doing something that sucks and is misaligned, that's the burnout. When you, like, you know, I've done 15-16 hour days on a set and I've been so tired, and it's been the best tired I've ever felt, as opposed to sitting in an office for, you know, for 12 hours. So there's a different kind of tiredness.
I'm just picturing that 16 hours. That means you and a bunch of blokes going to a bar, getting a bunch of beers, cheering off to the games while they were still playing on the television, right? I feel like that's what's happening.
I'm talking about a set, though, yeah? Being on sets.
Oh, no, I know. I'm saying what happens after the set. I'm assuming there's no beer while you're doing the production. More beer.
What? I had a 16-hour day, and then I had to fly straight to Canada after. And I hadn't checked the visa thing. And I thought, I'm just going to online. I could not keep my friggin' eyes open. And I thought, I'm just going to check the online check-in. I'm going to sleep for an hour and go to the airport. And I checked the online check-in, and it said, you need a visa. And I didn't realize. And so I could barely keep it was an electronic visa. It was a simple visa. It wasn't like a major thing. But when I tried to apply for it, it said this might take 72 hours, right? So I was like about to get on the plane. And so I was like, oh man, I didn't read this thing. And then, but the thing is I couldn't keep my eyes open. And my buddy was trying to call the embassy, the Canadian embassy and all this sort of shit. And I basically just had to let it go. And then I just tried everything, and then I just started to nod off, and then bang, the visa came through and I was off to the airport, and like it just rolled on. But that was after 16 hours shooting.
Okay. Very different than the whole bar and beer and television scenario. No, it was long flight to Canada. Damn, reality sometimes will be like, oh, wasn't that exciting?
It's like you said before, obstacles and just they just keep coming. It's how you navigate them.
That is just such a weird situation to be in, you know, like having to get onto a flight and you just spent 16 hours prior,
and then being teleported like into another world, and then going straight back from that back onto the set. Like being in a forest in Canada and then going back onto the... I found this a lot, actually. I don't want to keep bringing it back to the... But it's like I found this sometimes this contrast between different worlds. Like you're in one and then suddenly you're in another within a couple of hours. Like it's crazy. It can really kind of like... I love it, but it's crazy.
It is. It's kind of... It's crazy in a way because I can relate... I mentioned earlier in the podcast the way that, you know, I was raised, and when I left the community, I like literally went from non-real world, you know, into one world, into another world. And you're right, there's definitely like you can see a contrast of how people are. Just to give you an example, like the place I grew up in, the community has their own medical facilities, they have their own businesses. It's like you do everything within your own place. So there's no sense of any diversity. You are the diversity. So when you go out into the real world and you realize everybody is doing something to make it, everybody's working, you're like, oh my God, this is a lot louder and stronger than you realize. You know, and I don't think people necessarily realize because they've been raised in it their whole life. They just don't realize that it's a lot to take in at once.
That's a real constructed world, like to step out of.
It's like Disneyland, only more religious.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know how that would work.
So how, like, this is a big question, but do you still have a faith?
I'm not religious by any regards, but I do consider myself agnostic. I do believe in the universe is a living, breathing thing, and I feel like the universe does guide us and send us in different ways because we are made out of it. You know, one of the things that I always loved hearing, I think it was from Neil deGrasse Tyson, he said that, you know, the universe is made out of like three main things, which I think it was carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen, I believe. I think those were the three. Don't quote me, I'm not a scientist. And he said that those are the three main things in the universe, and those are the three main things that we're made out of. We're made out of the same things that the universe is made out of. So what does that tell you? To me, that tells me that there's a deeper underlying that we might be in the belly of a very large whale.
Hmm. Man, it brings me back to a question I used to ask when I was younger about the mass of the Earth. So when I was working in architecture, I was asked by an American architect whether I thought the weight of New York was heavier or lighter than it was 100 years ago. And I gave him the most lame... I'd been studying architecture, and I basically said it was heavier because there was more buildings, right? And it was like, it just made me realize I hadn't really picked up a lot of kind of more universal concepts and stuff. Anyway, when I changed it to the world, as in, you know, has the mass of just strictly the Earth changed heavier or lighter over time? This question, when I used to ask it, it wasn't to try and prove anything, but it was a real, it sort of drew a line in the sand of like whether people wanted to have more in-depth discussions, but it got fucking crazy, man. Like people, it always ended up in a religious, it often ended up in a religious discussion, like bigger things. It often went the other way and someone was like, yeah, of course it's heavier because there's more like overweight people. I had the most classic range of answers and stuff, and I had to stop asking it. But it was a real interesting.
I mean, I could answer it if you want me to. I mean, one of the ways I look at it is, if you were a giant and you could hold the Earth in the palm of your hand, and you put your finger, and you rubbed it against the surface of the planet, it would feel as smooth as a cue ball. And why? Well, the reason is that the more you shrink down mass, the more area of density there is. So for example, we look at, you know, New York with these giant streets. Reality in space, if you have something that's large enough to hold the Earth, if you took a finger, it doesn't matter how many streets there are or how tall the buildings are. They all became the same length, the same everything. It's kind of the same thing when you zoom out of a picture and you zoom in. You see more clarity to it. So I don't necessarily think it has to do with the weight. It's how you're seeing it and how big you are.
It's the perception. Well, this is the other thing is people always came back to people as if our weight was significant. And I think that says something because it's like, I think people think that we are, when actually we're almost like a bacteria on the surface and our weight is essentially like insignificant. That says something too.
I mean, I'll be honest, you know, if aliens did exist and they were coming to observe this planet, my personal opinion, they would become looking at two things: our weapon advancement technology and our artistic creation. I have a feeling that they probably come and observe, like, you know, concert, film productions, see how things are being made here on this planet. Because, I mean, to another species that's from, you know, millions of light years away from another planet, for them to come here and be like, ooh, what are these creatures doing? They're taking these metal things with strings. Ooh, this is cool, you know, and they come and watch. I would think that would be kind of interesting, you know, for another species.
Yeah. And whether we're just on track to wipe ourselves out and they're like, okay, they'll do it to themselves.
Maybe that's why they're here. Maybe they're here to stop that. You know, we don't necessarily. Yeah, because I mean, they started popping around the 1940s. You know, the strangest thing is we don't even realize this. How long has the film industry been around?
Well, since the early 20s, isn't it? With the
like the teens, 1920s.
Teens. Yeah.
That's what, like 100 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. Roman Empire was like about 2,000 years ago, right? So we were butchering people like, we eat our bacon not even like 125 years ago. And then all of a sudden, 100 years ago, we started making films. And then this is where we are now. And that's only 100 years. So,
it's a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, like 2,000 years ago, we were ravishing barbarians. And then in 100 years, we created film and artistic film productions and different types of directors and producers and cinematographers in 100 years.
It's a drop in the ocean, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen that series on Japan between 1200 and 1300? I think it is. Or the history of Japan between like 1200 and 1300 is fucking crazy. Just the most brutal 100-year period in terms of land
grab. Can you elaborate?
Like samurai lords going for trying to get power of regions. And like, there's a series I watched, a Netflix thing about that. I think it's 1200 to 1300. It could be 13 or 14. I have to check it. But it's when the regions in Japan were up for grabs, basically, and these samurai lords were trying to like retain power, and it was just brutal as it gets. And then all the honor of like failing and falling on the sword, and then just bloodlines and crazy time in terms of that barbarian stuff you're talking about, like that period in Japan, man.
Yeah, and look at Japan now. I mean, Japan today is one of the most heavily advanced technological. I mean, if you ask anybody, where do you get professional photography? It's Japan.
Straight out of Japan.
That's it. There's no other place that you get it. I mean, that's where the greatest film cameras, video camera, I mean, anything that you need for film production is made in Japan. And I mean, even more to your point, they were ravishing barbarians over 1,000 years ago. And now they're people of honor and tribute. I'm like, what? What the fuck? Where did this happen? It's crazy. It's like, you know what it feels like? Honestly, it feels like somebody turned up the dial just a notch. That's literally how it feels. Like, something or somewhere just decided, you know, I'm going to just turn it 3 degrees to the right.
Crank it a little to the
right. Yeah, just crank it a little to the right.
I love that you could still go there at 7 a.m. You just got at it.
Yeah, man.
Now, Dave, do you have a potential challenge that you've perhaps thought about for the audience of this show, given your journey and your experience or anything really? Is there anything that springs to mind?
No, Twixie, you can have your own opinion later. I think a good thing to get out of is interacting with people. You know, we spent the pandemic of locking ourselves away. What I mean by this is there are like event boards, Facebook, yeah, you can go on Discord, you can go around, you know, your local area, downtown, and just go out. You know, I know you love your phone, I know you spend $1,200 on it, but you have 7 days a week. I'm sure you can take a few hours going out to a game night, going out to drink a few beers, watching a game or something. Just get out. Go outside. Spend time with people. It's a great way for being an artist to kind of get the creative juices flowing. And it's also a big part of what makes us human beings, is interacting with others. So I think that would be...
Interaction is awesome, man, and so important. It's so healthy. Like, I was just out here the other night, and we literally, like, here just down the road here, you hang out in the kiosk. You would have seen it when you were over, but there is a sense of community here, and I just love it, because you can literally just like pick a street pole, lean against it with your buddy, and just you know, observe what's going on around and like just hang with people out the front of kiosks or bars or whatever. And there's less phones, but that's a brilliant challenge.
We're so addicted. It's just it's not even normal, and it's just. It's not even like trying to be old fashioned or anything. It's just nice because there's a lot of really nice local places that are opening, like local breweries, especially like down here in South Florida. I'm assuming like where you live, there's a lot of great places too. And you don't even have to, you could spend an hour and go home or something. I don't know. Mm. 30 minutes, maybe. Trust me, you're going to spend more than an hour. But you know, you're like, oh shit, I've been here for 3 hours already. That's how it always feels.
Interaction, man.
Yeah.
Interaction. And so these psychedelic paintings and stuff you're doing, are they online or you do them for yourself? Like, can people see those or?
I haven't really, I haven't really like progressed and haven't done art, in quite a few years, but as a podcast, we do have merch. I have to figure out and get that all sorted, but, all of the merch that we make for the podcast is drawn by me. Stickers.
Cool.
Yeah, t-shirts, all of that's done by me.
That's awesome. I love the whole integrative process of this stuff, that there's so many angles you can go off and like, yeah, the integration of it all is really cool.
Yeah, it's important.
For people who don't know about the pod, where can people find it's Lost in the Groove?
That's an excellent question. Well, you can find Lost in the Groove at Lost in the Groove Pod. We are on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube.
Awesome. Well, like I say, I just think it's great in this time of minimal interaction, especially, like I said, me as an older guy chatting to like a younger guy with similar like philosophies and stuff. I just think it's really cool. So we should just keep it going.
Like two sides of a coin. You know, you don't know which side you're going to get.
Yeah, and when I'm chatting to like younger guys and stuff, I never do the mansplaining type thing. Like, you know what?
When I was your age, I had my head on my shoulders. Oh, please.
It's all perspective, so.
God. I always love those. I'll never forget this. I once had somebody that did, you know, when I was younger. And he was a sweet guy. I mean, he was a Gen Xer, and you know, he was telling me and how, like, you know, when he was younger, how he was more responsible on getting his car, you know, in his apartment. And me just being a blunt and honest person, I just retaliated and I was like, yeah, it was easier. You were my age in the 90s. Your car was a 72 Ford, you know, Roadrunner that cost you like $200, was like... 5 miles a gallon, you know, you got 5 miles per gallon, maybe if you were lucky. And your apartment was like $200 and it was a shithole. Like, don't give me that mansplain speech of like when I was your age. I hate that because like you were alive in a different era and you were alive in a different place that had different responsibilities and different requirements. And it's just like, you can't expect other people to understand that. And be like, oh, why can't you do that too? Because it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
it's fly the same.
Yeah. Different world.
Yeah, for sure, man. I had a $200 Ford Laser that like blew up on the way to a gig.
Oh my God, I cannot believe I know what that is. Oh God.
You know, the funny thing about that car, it had a cracked head gasket and it would go 1 kilometer before it, like, the engine cut out. And then I came out the front of my house to go to work and it was gone. And I was like, if somebody stole this, they would have got a kilometer and it would have, like, conked out.
You could call up the cops and be like, yeah, he's broken down about a kilometer away.
And when I was kind of happy because like it was too much to, it was going to cost more to fix it up.
Yeah.
So I could get the insurance. But when I called the insurance company, I kind of left, there wasn't a lot of urgency. And I think I called them like 2 days later and they were immediately like, if your car was stolen 2 days ago, why is it taking you like nearly 3 days to call us? And I was just like, busy working, you know. But I think they found it and they ended up getting actually quite far with it. And I was surprised at how far they managed to get in the car. So,
it actually did get stolen.
It was stolen.
Oh my God.
And the insurance guys were like, why is there no urgency? Because I just didn't care about the car, but I just couldn't believe someone had stolen it.
It's one, if we want to talk about the difference of European and American culture, is hands down, you know, because Americans are, I'm being honest, you know, they need their BMWs, they need their Mercedes. But let me tell you this, when I was out in Israel, my, I'll never forget this, my cousin, he had, was a Ford, was not a Ford, I think it was, not, I think it was a Ford, not a Ford Pinto, it was the one that came after it, it wasn't available in the U.S. It was a 3-speed manual, it had, I think, a 1500cc engine, okay? And that car, whenever he shifts, I'm not kidding. And it was so loud. Like, if you drove this car at 11:30, you would wake up all of your neighbors. And I remember him telling me, like, this is my car, you know?
dude, the car stories, I had another one that had a, like, the muffler on it was screwed, and the
right,
muffler
we're ending
was...
a podcast, by the way.
Yeah, this is to bring it home. The muffler was shot, so this thing sounded like it was just like, brrr, like it was just
horrible.
Crazy muffler on it. And I also needed to get it, like, I don't know what the term is in the States, but re-registered, like reapproved to be on the road. And
that
I
depends on which state you're in, because a lot of states, like even here in Florida, they don't require it. So you can have your car with a broken engine here in Florida and your car's like wobbling on the street, and that's perfectly legal. I'm not joking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
It's crazy.
Well, mine was due for one thing, and I was going up a hill, and the muffler was like roaring so loud that everyone in the neighborhood was like turning their heads. It was due to be like, it needed to be roadworthied, we call it. And I think from memory, I was like just putting my seatbelt on, and a cop saw me, and he was on foot. No, he heard the car, like no one could. So he heard the car, and then he saw me in it, like putting the seatbelt on. And so I just went round the corner, and let's just say I got stuck in traffic and I got caught by the cop on foot.
it's like
getaway, runaway, and I got caught on foot. And then when he was booking me, he put his lunch on the bonnet
He
booked me. And when he finished booking me, it was like 35 degrees being in Australia. His lunch had like melted. And he basically had a meltdown after he booked me because, like, he'd lost his lunch, like, as well. That's...
Poor guy. I mean...
But he caught me on foot.
That is so... That's like, you know, the irony in that. You know, like, there's no horse or even motorcycle.
No motorbike.
Nothing.
Nothing.
He's just like...
It's the most... unglamorous getaway story in history. The cop just walked up and said, "You're under arrest."
Oh my God.
Anyway, I could go on because I basically got arrested here in Germany, but that's for nothing. Anyway, that can be for another time.
Yeah, that could be for another time.
We should do more of these.
Yeah,
but I appreciate you getting up early, man, and it's always awesome to chat. So,
of course,
thank you.
My pleasure. Well, thank you for having me.
Mom.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.